It's October.
The spookiest month of the year, and that means only one thing. History takes a back seat to our for love of scary movies. That's what it does. As we indulge in deep cuts, and here we all are. My goodness, what a full house we have tonight. We have from the heart of hell, from the heart of Hollywood, we have morose Mike Black.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, morose Mike Black.
That's me.
That is you. That is, in fact, you, as we've acknowledged by the audible sounds that you're making when I have acknowledged you. See, we're moving ahead, folks. And then from the chilling heartland, from Chicago, we have Daniel the Demon Dingman.
Going there.
There you go. There you go. Also making sounds. And then we have also from the heart of Hollywood, from the hellish heart of Hollywood, Amanda, how do you say zombie in, I can't read the rest of your title here.
Igbo.
Igbo. Igbo. Amanda, how do you say zombie in Igbo? Brass?
Hello. I'm so glad to be here.
And lastly, but certainly not leastly, my younger sibling, who was going to pinch hit for us, but now he's just a fifth wheel, Christian El Fantasma Lamont.
I'm alive.
Hello.
Yes, there we go. So here we all are. Dan, by the way, you guys, has a train running through his home, so we're going to be muting and unmuting. It's going to be pleasant and unpleasant. Say something, Dan.
Well, what's going on right now is my block, literally outside my house. They're having a block party. There's a band outside. So it might be coming through. Right now, what are we playing? We're playing some Ray Overson.
All right, and that's why they're shooting off cannons and doing things with Dan. So tonight's theme is super exciting. It is non-American horror stories. A theme chosen by Miss Amanda Brass. Brassy, why did you decide this was what we were going to do tonight? Talk to us.
Since we started doing this last year, we focused really on Hollywood-centric, archetypal. I feel pretty run-in-the-mill horror. Very basic, but like the template, the blueprint for horror. I wanted to jump completely outside our comfort zone. I wanted to look globally for horror and see what influences and what art is being developed in that general region outside of our Hollywood eyes.
And I feel like horror is, I mean, it's universal. I think there's ghost stories and vampire stories from like all over the world. Anyone have like a favorite, like out of this country, like ghost monster story that they want to relay before we get into the movies? Like, I feel like, you know, Mexico has La Llorona and you've got the Chupacabras, right? Which is relatively recent, kind of space alien-y things. But what anybody else have like Dan, I feel like you probably have like 13 Irish vampires, like, in your family.
No. What I was actually thinking is a really scary story is from the Upper Midwest Native Americans, the Wendigos.
Oh, sure. Brass, right. The Wendigo.
Right, and there's a lot of different stories among different peoples and tribes, but all of them are really scary.
Yeah. Like
skinwalkers.
Yeah, I mean, definitely not what we were thinking about, because those would definitely count as American, Native American, but American nonetheless. Brass, you got any favorite like foreign spooky things?
I'm a big fan of Japan feeding hungry ghosts. I think that's darling. That's embracing the inevitable by welcoming it to a little snack and a meal. Feeding hungry ghosts is a Japanese thing. I'm a very big fan of that.
Dan, you have an opinion on Japanese hungry ghosts?
No, I just wanted to say, we talked about it last week. Christian is the one that brought it to me. Carousel with Dreams.
dreams.
The ghost sequence is terrifying.
Christian, do you have anything to say about Kurosawa's dreams and feeding hungry ghosts? Oh, he's still talking. What were you saying, Dan? Sorry, I muted you.
No, I was just saying, we talked about it last week. In Kurosawa's dreams, there's that really scary ghost sequence. And I said that your brother is the one that showed it to me.
Got it. Christian, do you agree with this? Did you show it to Dan?
I mean, I probably did. We had Kurosawa's dreams on VHS on one of those copy tapes. So it's been a while, but yeah, like Kurosawa and dreams and Martin Scorsese are just generally terrifying anyway.
I agree. Martin Scorsese is terrifying in interviews primarily. All right. So Amanda Brass. Anything else you want to say about the choice here before we jump into Mr. Mike Black's choice for this movie? And by the way, Mike, hats off to this choice because it is such a crucial, like, there's so much to say about this. So Brass, anything you want to say about this before we jump in?
Jump in, because I can't.
All right. So our first film chosen by Mr. Mike Black is Gamera Super Monster. Let's watch.
From beyond the universe, an invader who plans to conquer the entire cosmos begins an attack on Earth. Mystifying and terrifying event, and from outer space, the age of the monster begins. The Earth is in danger. Who can save the Earth?
Oh, Gamera! He will save us?
Gamera, super monster fighting savagely for justice against evil. Mache Fumiaka, a space woman whose task is to defend the Earth, helped by the most powerful monster of all time. Ah. A space battleship and the Galaxy Express train, never before seen in science fiction movies. See? Super Monster, a space movie on a gigantic scale. Stunning effect. Super Monster, the most riveting film in the history of motion pictures. Who will win, Gamera or the enemies of the Earth?
Whoo! That is amazing.
Yeah. I guess real Gamera fans, it's almost universally panned as the one that destroyed the franchise. It was considered like the worst by far. Like, it was the Batman and Robin of Gamera.
Despite the fact that it has Mache Fumiaki, in this incredible 80s Superwoman outfit and her like the fact that she towers over everybody, like the fact that she's kind of like a sexy 80s seductress does nothing for the movie.
No, it's I love that they merged Charlie's Angels and Wonder Woman into one super lady. And then they were like, why stop at one? Let's have three. And they can all fly and shoot lasers.
And the other two don't really, like, they don't do much other than just support
more
the first
support.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're pretty much there just for that. To, a friendly ear in battle. And this movie is also part of why it's so pan is because it's kind of a best of Gamera. Like, it's all stock footage. That to save money, they just used stock footage. And those shots that you see that look like a Macy's Day Parade float of Gamera is the, I think, the only new Gamera footage in the film. And man, the plot is almost non-existent. But basically, aliens come to Earth in a Star Destroyer direct from Lucasfilm.
Yeah, right? Like, that is... Like, here, hang on. I got a picture of the FACO Star... That's literally... That's it. And it is totally a Star Destroyer. Like,
it's
and this is post-Star Wars, too. Like, you look at this, and you look at it, and you're just like, this has got to be made in 1952, right? Like, this is a 1963 movie. Like, this is... There's no way. This is 1980. Yeah.
And Gamera in the previous films had earned the moniker friend to all children. And as we all know, a child's imagination has no copyright laws. So they were able to use all sorts of stuff, or just shamelessly used all sorts of stuff. And nobody seemed to mind, because I think everyone in Japan knew that no one was going to see this. It was so fun. The fights all supposedly take place on Earth, but because it's stock footage of previous space battles and stuff like that, there's shit that could never have possibly been on planet Earth that they're fighting in different environments. And Gamera's main moves are turning his limbs into jet thrusters and firing in a centrifugal force motion. And his other move seems to just be dry humping the enemy really hard until he submits. It's a lot of fun. You're going to be tempted to watch it like pornography, where you fast forward to the good parts, to what you think are the good parts. Don't. I'm telling you, don't. Watch the dialogue between the space ladies and the little boy. And there's a lot going on there that's just more bang for your buck. You can find this free with or without subtitles. I think it works just as well either way. Invite a few friends over. Oddly enough, MST3K did all the previous Gamera films. This one is so bad that they didn't. It hit their threshold of shitty. That they were like, we have nothing left to say at this point, so fuck it. Yeah, I can't recommend seeing this movie highly enough.
It is so in my family, and Christian will definitely vouch for this, but we have films that we refer to as shitastic, and this is a shitastic film, and I think this is what's great, and I love starting this whole conversation with this film, because many of the films we're going to discuss here have a through line. And this is a good place to start it. And that is that this movie was made with the intent of rescuing the studio.
Franchise.
Yeah, the franchise and the studio from bankruptcy. They're just like, oh, no, we know what's going to fix this.
Oh, yeah.
And they put this...
Such balls in that aim that there's a point in the movie where they throw a little shade at Godzilla, who is like the yes. whole reason Gamera exists. Like, he was born as an answer to Godzilla. But they had the balls in this movie to be like, ah, Godzilla sucks compared to our hero. And it's so great to see that much hubris in a 30-second bit of film. Oh, it's really a wonderful time.
It is. It is. And so that moment, like, I think I know what you're talking about. It's when the billboard falls
yes.
over
yes.
and
yes.
there's a billboard, and the billboard is for a Godzilla movie. Like, they're throwing shade at the most successful monster franchise in history,
yeah.
you know, with their turtle with the jetpack, the dry humping turtle with the jetpack feet.
It's like William Hung throwing shade at Adele.
There you go.
It's really, really marvelous to see.
Yeah, it's I love this movie for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is the desperation that it was made with. Like there's an air of like, this is our last moment. And I think nothing says this is it. This might be our last chance. Than the costumes of the super ladies.
Yeah.
Which I have to say, like, they promise, like the film, the costumes of these ladies promise more than is actually delivered.
Than they could possibly deliver.
It wouldn't. Oh. It's an absolutely glorious movie, and it is everything that. But I think what I think is the most important part of this movie, and how it kind of ties into a lot of the stuff that we talk about, is that horror and monsters and all of these kind of different things, they can be done well, inexpensively, and. You can find success by making something that is relatively inexpensive.
Yes.
And so very often what you find is like people are willing to roll the dice on some pretty crummy stuff because it's got monsters, because it's got terror, because it's got horror. And it's also like a launching pad for a lot of careers. No one in Gamera, by the way, in Gamera Super Monster, launch their career there.
No.
But it, you
many
know,
of them are still working today.
But
they're
but,
still allowed to work.
But with I think what we're gonna see here is that like horror launches careers and launches and actually can deliver more of a box office punch because it can be made relatively inexpensively. And I think many of the movies that we're going to bring tonight, including yours, I dare say that none of the movies that we're bringing to the table tonight had massive, massive budgets. Most of us are talking here about films that were done very on the cheap with relatively unknown actors in order to just bring in some money and get some exposure and get the story out there.
Right. And this came out in 1980. I think Evil Dead came out around the same time.
That's right.
And probably had a similar budget. And so, yeah. And both of those movies, I don't think either of them set any records at the box office. But now they're, I'm sure they've at least made their money back, whatever it was that they put into it, you know.
Especially this one, I think it wasn't that difficult. Well, it tanked. This film tanked in Japan and internationally.
Yeah.
I know. Who would have guessed? Yeah. So I'm so glad we started here because it really moves right. It just seamlessly walks into our next film, which is the one I brought to the table. So I'm not gonna. I'm not going to say much more about Wolf's Hole, other than it's not what you think.
Dan has his hands up.
Oh, Dan, sorry. Go ahead. What do you want to say?
So the term Wolf's Hole is a little weird. It should translate to Wolf's Lair, not Wolf's Hole.
Who are you to translate Czech?
I've been there 4 times.
All right. Anyway, the name of the movie is Wolf's Hole. And I'm going to stick with Wolf's Hole, mostly because I like saying Wolf's Hole. All right, so without further ado, Wolf's Hole. For those of you listening, there's not much to say other than there's shots of snow and young people being afraid. Young Czech people being afraid and ice melting. This is a very long, very silent preview, but it just basically has a lot of young people running around. The stakes seem very intense. There's a pot boiling some water. Young woman says, yes, a carrot on a snowman. Breaks off the carrot and reveals. And I have to say that the pace of that preview is also the pace of the film. It doesn't go by quickly, and you don't necessarily know what the hell is going on.
Well, that snowman shot was a lot of fun.
Yes. And I do have to say that is the shot, right? Like I think the grisliest moment of the whole thing, other than the discovery of the rat. So, Dan has something to say. What's up, Dan?
We we talked last week about, remember when they didn't tell you the whole story in previews?
Yes.
Clearly. We don't have the whole story.
We do not have the whole story in the preview here. But, and I think it's important for us to we kind of actually do. All right, there's going to be spoilers here. I'm just going to spoil a lot of this stuff for everybody. What's up, Dan?
I think the story is about rats in Prague during the communist government.
No, but you're not far off in the sense that this was made in 1986, which was still communist Czechoslovakia. So here is how the story goes. They get these kids kind of like they all get together and they're picked from their schools and they get an invitation and they're brought to this wolf's hole resort course and basically they're pitted against each other. 10 were supposed to be there, 11 show up. What is this extra person? And then the hosts, there's three hosts. There's this blonde girl who we see, this blonde girl here, and then some dude, and then some old dude. And basically the hosts start pitting them against each other, and they start going like, why are there 11? There's only supposed to be 10. Who's not supposed to be here? You should rat out your friends, like all of this kind of stuff. And it's an allegory for the Soviet era after 1956 and how the Czech people were supposed to turn each other in and supposed to turn on each other and all of these things. So these kids go through sort of this mental torture. At some point, this kind of goes a little bit off the rails and the older people, the hosts, reveal themselves to be aliens, space aliens, that are running an experiment in humanity. And they're like, humanity will kill them, will kill each other. We don't have to come in and kill you guys because you will kill each other. And they're just like, okay. And they're like, so now pick who you're going to kill. And the kids refuse. They're just like, we're not going to pick who we're going to kill. We refuse to kill one of our friends, right? And the aliens are like, what? Humanity, what? And then the kids do, you know, a bunch of things, you know, they eat and they still hang out with these aliens. This girl in particular, my favorite thing about her is that she's wearing a Mickey Mouse outfit, which is obviously not, you know, sanctioned by Disney, which I think is just amazing. It's a 1986 Czech Mickey Mouse sweatpants and sweatshirt matching outfit, and it's incredible. A lot of really great 1986 Czech fashion in this. But ultimately, the young people rebel against the space aliens that are trying to set them against each other and forcing death on them, and they get together and they escape. the reason they're all down to their underwear in this picture is because they were too heavy if they didn't strip down for that cart. And so they all strip down, which is good in horror films, as we know, young people barely clothed. Though this is, I don't necessarily think this counts as barely clothed. They escape, all of them, without anyone dying. The only person that dies in Wolf's Hole isn't really dead. It's the alien girl. It's this woman, the blonde. And she's frozen by the other aliens. The aliens are the violent ones, not humanity. It's very intense. It's very tense. They try to set people against each other. But ultimately, the Czech people love each other, and they all escape together, despite this cruel experiment by an external alien force.
Did they have a toboggan that they escaped on?
No, they escaped on this thing. It's some sort of like gondola that was used to bring wood up and down.
Oh,
it's definitely like It gives you an insight into the Czech Republic, Czechoslovakia at that period in time, which I gotta say, it was kind of funky and a little bit sexy. But ultimately, like, yeah,
the
I mean, I loved it.
Space travel, we're so, not able to catch them on that thing.
Yeah, I mean, they just walked out and jumped on this thing and escaped. Yeah, basically, these space aliens were relatively easily duped.
Okay. So there's a thing in Czech history, obviously because of where they're geographically located. We've been invaded by everybody multiple times. If you ever go to Prague, go and see the Czech epic, which are these 20-foot by 20-foot paintings. There's like 15, 20 of them telling the history of the Czech people. And it's the Germans, the Russians, the Polish. Like, just pick somebody around them. There's
aliens.
Something about being invaded. That's very much into their culture, and you explaining that, like, it fits in.
Yeah, and I think that's why I love this, is because it is very Czech, you know.
I hope they add this painting.
They add they need to add this scene of the kids escaping. So one of the things I've learned about the Czechs is that when they create something that kind of resonates, they will show it on TV multiple times throughout the year. So there's a Cinderella Czech movie that like if you talk to a Czech person and you go like, so what are you doing this Christmas? Watching Cinderella? They'll just be like, how did you know? Right? This is one of those things where you're just like, hey, what are you guys up to this week? Are you watching Wolf's Hole? And they'll be just like, only my people know this, right? Like, this is one of those things. Like, this is one of those movies for them. What were you going to say, Dan?
Oh, I was just going to say, all of those paintings were done by Muka.
By who?
Muka, who's like the national Czech artist.
Ah.
In fact, if everyone can see.
Oh, look at that!
Dan has a painting
of Czech teens clad in his apartment. That's not creepy at all, Dan.
I didn't buy them. Sarah bought them.
Sure you didn't. I'm going to mute you now. Okay. So that's anything anyone else like wants to observe. Christian, you have anything to say about Czech cinema and specifically this book film? Christian went to school for cinematography. He studied stuff. I'm interested to hear anything you might have to say, Christian.
More than anything, I'm fascinated by the idea that space aliens is part of the horror genre.
Oh, I mean, Menaces from Outer Space is something that we did last year. There's a lot of extraterrestrial intervention, as we know from Gamera, right? Like, it's not a small thing. Aliens are always jumping in and terrorizing humans. I mean, come on. Let me ask you something. Alien. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, Alien and Aliens, it's sci-fi, but really I think it's a horror film first, and then it's a science fiction film, right? Like the monster chasing down the humans, like that's all right. Okay, all right, thank you all for chiming in on that deep thought, by the way. Oh, Dan, you have something to say? God damn it. All right.
No, I didn't. I just agree with Christian.
Oh, you're just waving in agreement. I'm going to mute you again. All right. Okay. Our next film coming up. Amanda Brass, you ready?
Oh, yeah.
Let's go.
Oh. tell you, see, I see them with my two korokoro ladies. You don't even talk anything.
If you don't forget, say, Aisha na Ashia be.
I don't want your concern.
No worry. It was so concerned, just to watch everything I film. I don't know, go.
Like, dog will never see shit.
Look, what can your father? Come on.
She get bounced up for there. Come over here.
Where did they go?
Everybody don't tell on Juju. Hey!
What is it, Mr. Tarant? What would they fresh it? Baby, what would they drink?
If not by that one, you know, see, by now we go down for Juju.
So...
All right, the name of the movie is Ojuju from Nigeria. And Brassy, why did you choose this? Talk to us about this movie, because it looks awesome. I have to admit, I have not seen it. Has anybody else seen it?
Nope.
It would be really difficult for anybody to see it. It's you got to know somebody who will give it to you online. It's not streamable.
All right, so talk us through it.
All right, in 2014... a young horror film fan from Nigeria who grew up studying horror film or hammer horror.
Love the hammer horror, right?
He made this movie about his village, a small city in Nigeria, coming down with a zombie infestation, if you will. It is a metaphor for corporate intervention into people's lives. There's a poisoning of the well.
Right. People water is a big deal in Nigeria, right? So,
yeah.
So one of the things that I know about Nigeria is that drinking water, and that a majority of the population does not have access to clean drinking water.
No.
So that is something that community is dealing with.
And communities have wells. Everyone shares from the well. A lot of people are accessing it throughout the day and night. So everyone gets... And here comes some rather American themes of paranoia against your neighbor. Everybody's out to get me, paranoia. The big brother, the government, is trying to kill us all. But then it's also a little more nuanced. There's... women fighting back against men being real handsy, and that kind of disassociation between unity attracts a monstrous vibe. So you saw a woman struggling with a man, she pushed him off, and they called each other.
Sorry. I thought I was clicking on one of the pictures, but I. Sorry. So a woman is pushing off a man.
That begins as a root of tension between man and woman. There is no unity. So when the men become zombies, women have to find ways to. Yeah, he turns into a zombie. He drinks from the poison well, and then he is literally trying to consume his neighbors. They have to kill. Yeah, there's a lot of folklore. There's a lot of West African traditional root work. There is goddess worship. There is what we would lovingly call witchcraft, a gentle meaning of witchcraft. it's all wrapped up. There's a lot of cultural cues, but it's also a very modern movie saying if we let corporations have our water, we're going to be in real trouble. So there's social commentary, there's men and women commentary, and ultimately the town is only as healthy as their illest community member.
And I think that's interesting, because in all three of the movies that we've already covered, we are really being very specific to the ills of that community. For example, for you, it's the water and for the Czech people, it's the Russian intervention, and for the Japanese, it was our studio is failing and we need to cheaply make a camera movie. So there is a sort of like a value statement that gets made, and it gets made through horror. And I think that's something that we've been discussing. Dan has been very insistent on explaining to us Poltergeist isn't about actual poltergeists. It's about divorce, or what is it about, Dan?
Poltergeist is about the 80s.
It's about the 80s. So I'm gonna mute him now, and so that's the, you know, that's kind of what we it is a representation of culture at a given moment, yeah. And we've seen that all three times, right? The struggles of a people's, and I just think it's amazing how consistent that is, and I think one of the things that's gonna really come up. That's going to come up in the next movie we're going to look at is sort of the cultural transference of those struggles to the you know what? I'm just going to show this, and then Christian's going to talk about it, and then you guys are going to see exactly what we're talking about. So Christian chose a very cinema film. Christian, you want to tell us exactly where you found this movie? It's very right now.
It's at the new Academy Museum of Motion Pictures. What is it? They're doing a fantastic Hollywood. Or sorry, Hollywood. This one.
Very cool.
Just opened up. It's a 30 nights of spooky horror movies kind of thing. Screenings every single night, like all the classics you could imagine. And Macario was one of the first nights of this brand new theater. Beautiful print, 35 millimeter, as crisp as you could ever want it to be. And it was always...
I know that we all look for crispness in our films, so I appreciate that.
It was always a, look at the cinema, but it never really been, like, look at this in terms of Halloween time, spooky cinema. So it was a real treat to, like, get to watch it, and it's a kind of rare opportunity to get to see this movie.
So. All right, Christian, I'm looking forward to you talking us through this, so let's check out, let's roll the...
Bienvenido a mi gruta, Macario. Mira, Macario, esta es la humanidad. Aquí ves arder las vidas tranquilamente. A veces soplan los vientos de la guerra, los de la peste... y las vidas se apagan por millares al azar, las altas, las pequeñas, las derechas, las torcidas. Ahora reina la calma. Mira las artes.
Hay que tener más consideraciones con los muertos, porque pasamos mucho más tiempo muertos que vivos. Total, en esta vida, todos nacemos para morirnos.
So you just said we spend more time dead than alive, and we live basically to die. All right, Christian.
Okay.
And by the way, everybody, Dan's disappeared. So it was too much. It was too much for Dan. Anyway, talk us through this, Christian. Why did you choose this? What's going on?
So the
plot
trailer is full of spoilers. It just skips straight to the end of it. But it's also one of the most famous scenes. They filmed those candles at the Las Grutas de Cacuamilpa, which we've been to.
We have.
Yeah, where they charge you for toilet paper.
So just so you guys know, these grutas it's a cave system in Mexico. It's a gigantic cave system in Mexico. And if you need to go to the bathroom while going through these caves, they charge you for toilet paper. That's what Christian's getting to.
To evacuate your bowels while you're in the bowels of Earth. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Macario was filmed in 1960.
Which, by the way, I have to say, 1960, like, that was a surprise to me because this looks like a 1943 movie.
It is very much of the Mexican golden era.
Yeah.
Towards the end of that. So, okay, there you see Macario. He is a wood chopper. He's poor as dirt. He's a peasant. He's got like 12 children, a very understanding wife who also happens to go down the road of thievery. And so his biggest wish is that he gets to have a turkey all to himself. He's hungry. There's like plenty of scenes of like his children taking.
That is the saddest thing I've ever heard.
It kind of is. And yet the whole
let me interrupt here. So I do think it's important to note that Macario is very obviously indigenous.
Yeah.
And in Mexican film, indigeneity is portrayed as somehow simple but noble. Right? And so the fact that he wants a turkey for himself, my response, and I hope everybody's response, is like, what the fuck, dude, a turkey? Like, you can ask for more, right? There's more to life than having a turkey for yourself. But his needs are simple, and that's on purpose. We are supposed to think such simple wishes, such simple desires, as opposed to our desires for tons of money and plenty of sexy time and alcohol and all of that, right? So I just wanted to make sure that we noted that Macario's like, you know, and use the term peasant, and I also wanted to say that the term peasant is different in Mexico than it is in the US. So it is a correct term, but it doesn't have the sort of dismissive sense that we have here. It's somebody who cultivates the soil and somebody who works for a living. So sorry. Anyway, go on, Christian, please.
So Macario, he wants his turkey. His wife steals the turkey. He steals away. All he wants to do is eat the turkey in peace. So as he's getting ready to eat it, a mariachi shows up, like with his flashiness, and he's dressed in black, and he's got a charming mustache, and immediately, you know,
aren't all mustaches charming though?
So immediately, you know that this is the devil. It's that kind. It's not even allegorical. It is the devil. In a you know, mariachi outfit. That's not the death. Then Macario, he's like, get away from me. There's nothing you can offer me. I'm a humble man. So he steals away his turkey. He goes to another spot in the forest. Then this old man with a gourd shows up. Macario, let me eat some of the turkey. Macario's like, no. Like, you just want me to do something for show. You have everything. You don't need my turkey. The old man is dressed in white. He is obviously God. So then Macario takes his turkey and he goes, I've got to go somewhere else. He goes to a...
God and the devil both want this poor man's turkey.
Right. He can't get a break. So he goes over to the entrance of a cave and there's a man just gaunt. And he's the one that you see in all over, you know, the spoilers. He's got his sombrero, like, not him, that guy. And so he asks Macario, he's like, can I have some of your turkey? And Macario just gives up at this point. He's like, fine, give me half the turkey, or I'll give you half the turkey. This last guy is Death, but Macario gave him half his turkey. So he says, you know what? We're friends. We're cool, Macario.
You did a good me a friend solid, to have.
Right? You did me a solid. So I'm going to do this for you. And he gives him a gourd of water that for the rest of Macario's life, one drop will give immediate health to somebody who's sick. But here's the catch. The death will appear. He said, I'm never going to talk to you again, but you will see me always.
Ooh.
He says, if somebody has a chance of surviving and it's time to give them the water, I will be at the foot of the bed. If it's somebody's time to go, I will be at the head of the bed where you can see in that shot. So you go through this actually super watchable movie. Macario, he's kind of funny. The characters are very like likable and relatable. And I would say the key villains here in this one are Macario's own desires, Macario's children who drive him to take this thing. And then out of nowhere, it's the Inquisition.
What?
Yeah. The whole way through, you're thinking like this could take place in any like 1940s Mexico, 1960s, 1860s. And then you realize it's during the Spanish Inquisition. The Catholic Church is part of the villainy of all this. So a little background. Macario was the first nominated submission for the best foreign language film at the Oscars. And Gabriel Figueroa, cinematographer, they called him the fourth muralist.
Interesting.
Right. He was the cinematographer.
Got it. And so just so you know, who were the other three muralists, Christian?
Orozco, what's his name?
Cisqueros,
and what's the...
Diego Rivera.
So this guy was the fourth.
But he was very cool. Well, so I think one of the things that we've just learned in this group is that we probably shouldn't have someone who's actually into cinema on this show ever again. So thank you so much, Christian, for adding this. This movie was, no, I think it has a lot of like the themes, right? Again, we talked about like the themes around like this scene right here. You look at all the skulls and the crosses and all of the Day of the Dead paraphernalia that we know now, but in 1960 Hollywood, 1960 anywhere, that's probably seen as somewhat barbaric and somewhat like crazy and foreign. So I think it's a great like weird movie. I never knew it existed until you brought it up. Did you know it existed until you saw it at the Academy?
I did, because of that candlelight scene.
So
this
they teach
is
it at film school, do they?
No, they don't. No. I have it in a book actually. So this is one of the first movies that showed a wider audience Day of the Dead, Dia de los Muertos imagery. Because it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't really popular until kind of recently. Like it hasn't hit pop culture until the 80s, really. So it showed the calacas, which is the skeleton, the calavera, which is the skull, la catrina. It has like a big sequence by Pepe, the puppeteer. Apparently he was very famous at one point. But
Pepe the puppeteer?
It's his credit. And it's this whole dream sequence. And then ultimately, Macario meets his demise. But this is the first movie that really introduced these Day of the Dead themes and imagery to a worldwide audience. Like it was a very
Coco before Coco.
So if you guys actually have time to watch this one, super recommended.
I will try to hunt it down and add the link to it to all of the socials that we have here, because I think all of the other ones that we have here are relatively easy to find. Well, with the exception of Brassy's, yours, Ojuju is difficult to find. So if we can find Ojuju and if we can find Macario, we will drop the links on there. Well, Christian, that was amazing. Anybody have anything to say about Macario other than wow?
I enjoyed that they used the archetypes of good and evil and death as like a third foil. I love that. It's very Faustian, very Dante.
Yeah. Dan? Mike, you're on mute. There you go. Okay, both of you are unmuted now.
I was saying, I think that the Devil Went Down to Georgia was originally about Turkey.
Yes, it was originally about Turkey.
Interesting. It took place at a country buffet.
I think that's very correct. Dan, you had something to say as well, other than.
No, I was wondering when the movie was made.
We didn't catch that. What?
When was the movie made?
1960.
So the movie was made in 1960 in 1933, La Llorona. Then there was also a Dracula made in 1931.
And you talked about the 1931 Mexican Dracula last year. But it bears mentioning that if you have the Criterion Channel, and I do, just wanting to say that Christian doesn't, even though he's a film school person, I have it. So I can speak to cinema. Christian can't, because I have the Criterion Channel. And if you have the Criterion Channel, you can watch the entirety of the Mexican Dracula. Christian can't. Because no, I'm just kidding. I will drop the YouTube link to the Mexican Dracula on here too.
So yeah, Mexican Dracula, just for everybody else, was filmed at the end of the day after the Bela Lugosi crew would go home. Mexican Dracula would show up to set, and they basically did beat for beat. But in Spanish. So anyway,
very much in the same way that after like all of the fast food places close, all of the Mexican ladies with the hot dogs come out. Same thing. And as we know, the Mexican hot dogs are superior to anything that can be made at McDonald's or KFC or any of these places. So we highly recommend that same kind of pluck that makes the Mexican hot dogs delicious is what makes the Mexican Dracula spectacular.
So afterwards, it was El Vampiro, which was 1957. Then La Momia Azteca.
The Aztec Mummy.
Just the mummy in Spanish. And then Santo y Blue Demon contra el Dr. Frankenstein. I'm listing off some classics here. Then The Shape of Water, Guillermo del Toro. And then obviously it's Scooby-Doo. All these are Mexican classics of horror, and it's kind of a genre that there's a lot of talent, and it's also, I think we know through world cinema, it's a springboard for others.
Yeah, chime in, man.
I'd like to add that I first heard about Mexican Dracula about 4 years ago. And when I did, the image that stuck in my head was Bela Lugosi at the end of a long shooting day, leaving set as Mexican Dracula was arriving, and just the two of them crossing paths. And I was like, God, I don't know if anyone got a picture of any such an event, but I really hope someone did and that it's out there somewhere.
It's not. I don't know that the no. The English Dracula ever even acknowledged the Mexican Dracula. It's a shame, really, because it's the exact same sets. It's the exact same movie. Is it shot for shot, Christian?
Almost. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great movie. I highly recommend it if you have Criterion Channel, which I do. I would highly recommend that those of you who are in the world of cinema like I am.
Don't most cinephiles have that?
Sorry?
Don't most cinephiles have that? The Criterion Channel?
Yeah, I mean, I would say yes.
I mean, the ones that matter.
Yeah, the ones that matter. Precisely, precisely, precisely. All right. Our final film is not necessarily a deep cut, but it's an important cut, and it is one that Mr. Dingman has graced us with. So be ready both for that wind blowing sound as Dan talks about his film, and also some heavy duty Japanese horror. Here we go. Wow. That was the preview. And the preview was like literally like a terrifying child crawling.
So it's a wife.
All right, Dan, talk us through The Grudge.
All right.
Ju-on.
So The Grudge is one of my favorite movies, both the Japanese and the American versions. First off, the sound the ghost makes
that burping
is the
sound.
Most terrifying
Can
sound.
Can anyone make that sound? Brass, do it. Go. Do it. Make it. Nope, you're on mute. You're on mute.
Yes. Right.
I mean, it's one of the most recognizable horror sounds on the planet, right?
Yeah. And it's so scary. But the reason I brought up the Grudge, and I know it was lazy, but what I wanted to talk about was like, so there's two particular cultures that have amazing ghost stories, and that's Japan and the English and Irish. And you and I, Alf, have talked about this as, is it something in the like the island nations?
Yeah, somebody island nations, man.
Somebody actually wrote a critical like English essay about it, and I couldn't find it and wanted to find it. But there's something about being isolated that affects the whole culture that I thought was kind of cool. So
I had this conversation with a friend of mine from Samoa, and she and I mentioned like, oh yeah, you know, into family, into, you know, like big families, into religion, island people. And she's like, right. What do you mean? And I'm just like, yeah, the British and Irish are island people. And she's just like, holy smokes. She couldn't even think of herself as like an island person in the same way that they are. But when you're not an island person, you look at these folks and you're just like, yeah. Something about that isolation,
right? And so that's why I was pretty lazy this week, I'll admit, but that's what I wanted to talk about. Like, there's something about almost ghost stories more than monster stories or whatever that like those people are good at, and that's why I brought this up, because it's such a good both versions, the American and the Japanese original version, are so scary and so good.
Have we all seen this movie, by the way?
Both versions? Well, the Japanese is the best.
I agree. And because the subject matter is very, it is very Japanese, right? Like the way, holy smokes. Just the way that they bring, I don't know what it is about Japan and women, right? Like, women are the vehicle towards otherworldly revenge in all of the Japanese movies that we've talked about. Kuroneko last year, we talked about Haosu this year, right? And now The Grudge, and all three of them have three things in common. Women, children, cats. Three things that are, you know, I think universally baffling. But Brass, do you have any insight into potentially why, like, those three things just keep popping up?
I couldn't possibly speak to how Japan has grokked onto these three concepts as like a mirepoix of horror. They're good on their own, or even better altogether.
Yeah, that's real. That's real. Cats, women, and children, well, like, spooky.
I will say this. So, like, a mess of cats? What do you call a mess of cats? A mess of cats?
Pussy cats.
A terror? A pussy cat.
A terror of cats? Like, have you ever watched Hoarders? And, like, they have a ton of cats?
No. None of us watch Hoarders, Dan. I have the Criterion Channel, Dan. I don't watch Hoarders.
I think walking into a room full of feral cats is almost worse than walking into a room of mice or rats. Like, talk about things like scrambling up the walls and just going crazy.
By the way, guys, just because Dan has to raise his hand because he's got a helicopter in the room doesn't mean you guys do. You can just speak up, you know.
A group of multiple cats is referred to as a clowder. C-L-O-W-D-E-R. It is also known as a destruction of cats.
That's the best group. You know what I call it? Yeah, you call a group of crows, right?
Yes, we all know. We all know it's a murder, Dan.
What about owls?
You're not, yes, a wisdom of owls. We all know.
It's a parliament.
Whatever, Dan. Ever. You shouldn't have been so lazy about The Grudge. All right.
We all had to say The Grudge.
Women, anyway, moving on. Children. What were you going to say, Mike?
I said we all got the same Yahoo News you got, Dan, back in the day.
All right. And with that, I think we can conclude. I'm going to mute Dan again. With that, I think we can conclude this un-American horror story. I think it was really awesome, like, how all of us really went out and found just really unique pieces of film, with the exception of Dan. No, that's not true. Ju-on is peak horror from Japan, right? Like, this brought Japanese horror and, frankly, Asian horror to the forefront. People realized that there was more to terror, and more terrifying terror. As much as I love Haosu, Haosu never broke through in the same way that The Grudge did. And to this day, of the horror sounds on the planet, that burpee, that thing, still, like, sends a tingle down my spine. So while it was a little bit lazy, Dan, I have to admit it was an important film for us to go through. So anyway, thank you for Christian for bringing, like, that actual piece of cinema to our show tonight, and thanks to everybody for participating. Next week, what are we doing next week? I can't even remember. What is it, Brass?
Is it? It could be What a Twist.
What a Twist.
It could be.
Surprising,
I'm not sure.
Endings. All right. Everybody, be ready for that. Tonight, we're done. It has been Deep Cuts. Good night, everybody.
Good night.